You're heading south of the Mason-Dixon. This is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 120, covering the week of May 7th through May 11th, 2018. Glad to have you back on the program. Very glad to be here. Before we get started, just want to remind you all the usual things. If you like this podcast, please share it around on social media. You can find us on social media on Twitter at Abbeville Institute, on Facebook at Abbeville Institute, and of course, you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Abbeville INST. You can also go to our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org. You can give us an email address, and we'll give you a free ebook, Kirkpatrick Sales Emancipation Hell, and also you'll get signed up for our weekly email and our daily dose of Dixie, which comes out Monday through Friday. So go on out and do that. While you're at abbevilleinstitute.org, you want to go to the top of the page where it says support. You click on that, and there are donor options. You can help us explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition by giving us a small little donation, whatever you would like to do. We appreciate any support. You can donate monthly as little as $3 a month or $5 a month if you're not a student. Or you can donate annually as little as $25 a year if you're a student or $50 a year if you're not a student. And we have a new donation interface, so it's a little nicer, I think. So go on out there and check that out. Also, just want to remind you that we have our summer school coming up July 15th through 20th. At Seabrook Island, South Carolina. The topic is Southern Identity through Southern Music. It's going to be a fantastic time. Bobby Horton is going to be our banquet musician, our banquet performer. So we're really looking forward to that. So going out, there's information on that again in the middle of the page. So check that out. You want to get out to our summer school. Also, don't forget to download our application wherever you get your favorite applications for your smartphone or mobile devices. You can go to Google Play or iTunes. You've got our Abbeville Institute app, and of course, we do have that this podcast on there as well as all of our lectures. So go on out and get those things. And you can also get your Abbeville Institute apparel if you go to the top of the page as well at abbevilleinstitute.org, and you'll have a little button that says support. Under that, you have shop. Click on that shop button. It'll take you out and get your embroidered material and get hats, t-shirts, shirts, fleece. So everything you might want that has the Abbeville Institute logo. It's fantastic stuff. So go out there and get that too. Okay, all that said, let's talk about the week that was at the Abbeville Institute. And I want to start actually with a line from one of the pieces. It was actually the piece on Tuesday. And the line, it was written by Mark Winchell. And the title is The Making of the Southern Canon. And he concluded the piece with this line. And I think this is a theme I'm going to talk about throughout this podcast, but this is what he said at the end. Southerners are able to know who they are because they have never forgotten what they were. And so I think that's a line, it's a beautiful line, and it's one to ponder. Southerners are able to know who they are because they have never forgotten what they were. And what you're finding now, and I've mentioned this on this podcast before, we have this new field of quote-unquote memory studies, which is really just history. I mean, it's a way for historians to think they're doing something new. We're memory studies historians. It's just so silly. But that's this growing field of memory. And so what Winchell's hitting at here is, of course, memory. What is the memory of the past, and what is the memory of the South? This is what John Lukacs said that history was. History is the memory of mankind. That's what history is. There are no memory studies. All history is memory studies because it's how we remember who we were. It's how we remember the people that became before us, that came before us, and that's what history is. It's the remembered past. We know there's pasts there that we don't remember. I mean, we know there are billions of people that existed on this planet that we have no memory of. We know they're there, but we don't know anything about them. What we can remember is what makes us who we are. It's the old, I ask this in students, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and you're not around to hear it, does it still make a sound? Well, we know it does. We don't know what sound it made. We don't know when it fell. We don't know any of those things. We don't know what made it fall, but we know it was there. We see a tree on the ground as we walk in the forest and we say, okay, well, that tree fell down. When? I don't know. How did it fall? I don't know. Could have fallen down in a storm. Could have gotten just fallen over. Could have been too wet. Roots. Whatever it was, we know that it fell over. And we know it made a sound when it fell because we've heard a tree fall before and it makes a sound. when it hits the ground, whatever it does. But we don't know anything about that. It's the same thing with people. You come to a person, even if you go to a cemetery, you walk by and there's a person there, you just know that they were there. You can see their birth and death date. You don't know anything about them. You know they existed. But what were they? Who were they? You have to remember those things. And the same thing exists with a culture and a people. You have to remember those things. And I think that's what, and I know our mission at the Abbeville Institute is explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition. It's also to remember what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition. Because if we forget it, it's gone. And so simply by existing, the Institute existing, these things will continue. So when you have people like David Blight, who is a pioneer in quote-unquote memory studies, who's not very happy with the South and how they remember things, because his thing is, well, they're remembering things incorrectly. How so? This is how they remember it. It's correct, because they remember it that way. And you hear, you know, this get elderly people, they don't remember things the way that they were. No, they remember things the way they were, because that's how they remember them. So, we are remembering the past. We're remembering what is true and valuable. We are who we are because we haven't forgotten who we were. I love that line. And of course, this particular piece gets into the literary figures of the 20th century and beyond, moving forward in time. Of course, it was written in 1987, so 30 years ago, 1988, 30 years ago. And so much has changed since then. But the important thing is that there still is, and as he talks about in this little piece how people have said that Southern literature is dead, the Southern Renaissance is dead, because the South has been absorbed, it's become mainstream. And he says it's not true. We're still dealing with Reconstruction in the South, and the New South is still ongoing. And one of the things we're trying to do is figure out how you incorporate the good parts of the old with the new. And Southerners in the New South period were trying to do that anyways. They were still remembering who they were. And so when you think about memory and you think about that part of the Southern tradition, I want to talk about the bookends of this week, Monday and Friday. And then I'll get into Lincoln, which is another remembering who Lincoln was. So on Monday, we ran a piece. Well, it wasn't really a piece. It was a poem, and it was a video that I read, that I made. It was a poem that I read in the video of a cemetery in Columbus, Georgia. It was Confederate Memorial Day, and I happened to be there. And I took out my phone, and I recorded. It was a very beautiful scene. The sun was coming in just right, and it was over the two Confederate sections in Linwood Cemetery, which is the oldest cemetery in Columbus. And I just took this video, a couple of minutes, 2-3 minutes, of the cannon from the CSS Jackson, which overlooks one section of the cemetery. And the CSS Jackson was completed in 1865, but never saw any action. It did a little steamed around the Chattahoochee for, I think, once or twice. And then the Union Army came in and sacked Columbus in April of 1865. But they still had the cannon from it. It's a 7-inch Brooke rifle cannon. They've got it sitting there in the cemetery. And it's overlooking this section. And it had all these First National flags. And then, of course, a battle flag tied up in a black ribbon. It was just, and the wind was blowing. It was just surreal. It was beautiful. And so I thought, this would make a great scene for a poem. And the poem is The Confederate Dead. And that's a memory. Because that particular poem, and many of the poems that were written after the war, and the inscriptions on Confederate monuments, what you're looking at is a memory of a people. And that's what's under assault as we talk about tearing down monuments, or taking down symbols, or eradicating Confederate Memorial Day. You're eradicating the memory of a people. And when I posted that video, and then, of course, it went on YouTube, and there was this, you always get the trolls, and this one idiot who has been on there before and finally just blocked the guy, talks about how we should just piss on every Confederate grave because these people are traitors. Traitors. That's his memory. It's an incorrect memory. I can say that's an incorrect memory because of the time and what people were saying. And of course, people did say that this was treason in the 1860s. People said that after the war. But when you look at the entirety of American history, you'll find that that memory, or that opinion, which is more of an opinion than a memory, you're not remembering anything there. You have an opinion on an action. And I say that because the bookended piece on Friday, Americans are willing to accept a particular type of memory. We think that Washington and Jefferson and Madison and Monroe and on down the line, these are great. John Adams, doesn't matter. Alexander Hamilton. These are great men because they achieved American independence. And yet the same thing cannot be said of Americans who were fighting for what Lincoln called government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Same thing. Lincoln, of course, was being inconsistent and disingenuous by saying that because he was fighting against that. But we have this very uneasy relationship between the two, and you'll have people say, well, yeah, it's the same. You can't say it's the same because they won in 1783. They won. So because they won, we don't call them traitors. But because the South lost, they're traitors. It's very inconsistent, very stupid, but that's what it is. And so the piece on Friday by Sheldon Van Auken, that embarrassing analogy, this piece was written in 1990, and it's talking about the independence of Lithuania in 1990, the secession of Lithuania that Americans wholeheartedly supported. Wholeheartedly supported. We loved it. We loved it. And what did Gorbachev do? Nothing. He didn't send in the tanks. He didn't send in the army. When Lithuania wanted its independence, they got it. And Americans applauded, stood up. Yes, this is great. Fantastic. But this is the uneasy or embarrassing analogy. Why is that okay? Why is the secession of Lithuania any different than the secession of South Carolina? Well, because one's in America, and you just can't do that. And one's over in the Soviet Union. They were bad guys. America was not bad in 1861, but the Soviet Union was. And so because of that good guy, bad guy analogy, or that perspective, one is good and one is not. But that creates an interesting problem because you're promoting secession. You're saying this is okay, this is good. A people seeking independence, a people seeking self-determination, not being under the thumb of an alien force or an alien power. And you can say, well, how can you say Northerners were an alien power? How can you say that? Well, to Southerners, and if you look at what America was in 1861, what America was in 1650, what America was in 1750, there were different Americas. It was a pluralistic society. It was a federal republic of independent republics that had joined together in a union for specific and delegated reasons. And one of those was foreign power and the other, or foreign policy, and the other one was commerce. And if those things were, if the general government went beyond those powers and they were violating the compact that the people of the states had formed, and therefore, as the states had not given up their sovereignty, you cannot give up your sovereignty. Sovereignty is something that cannot be divided or surrendered. Once you have it, you have it. The whole idea of being able to delegate a power, if you delegate a power, you are granting that power, and this is how the language is used in the Constitution. The powers herein granted. Who's doing the granting? The people of the states. And because they grant that power, they have the power to rescind that grant or leave entirely. If I was to give a class of students the power to grade their own exams, and I get all the exams back, and they're all A's. I could thereby rescind that power and say I'm taking it back, and I'm going to grade these things the way I want to. I have the authority to do that because I'm sovereign in that regard. They are not. They're the students. And so it's no different when you're talking about government power. So what's the difference? There's no difference. This is where the memory of Confederate dead and the embarrassing analogy of secession go hand in hand. And where we need, as Dr. Winchell said, to not forget what we are. Whether it's North or South, Northerners don't need to forget who they are either. They didn't remember who they are, and that's fine. And a pluralistic union, a federal republic of independent republics, that works. When you start getting unitary states, that doesn't work any longer. That's why you have conflict. This is why Americans are angry, and they don't really realize it because we've lost the federal republic that allowed a pluralistic society to exist. Diversity can exist in a pluralistic society of in a federal republic. It can exist just fine because no one group is telling another group how to live. And all the South wanted to do was be left alone. That's it. Just leave us alone. Let us govern ourselves. That's not what the North wanted to let happen. They couldn't let that happen. Lincoln couldn't let that happen. So who is the real Abe Lincoln? This is the piece by Ludwell Johnson, In Search of the Real Abe Lincoln. Who is Abe Lincoln? We have this Abe Lincoln that's sitting in the Lincoln Memorial, the deification of Lincoln. Lincoln, the demigod of American polity, the American demigod. We live in, and I think that we still live in Lincolnian America to an extent. To an extent, we still live in Lincolnian America. I think there are three distinct epochs in American history. You have the founding period, Jeffersonian America, and the way that Americans viewed. Now, there was always the nationalist pushback from that. But certainly from the time of independence until 1861, we had Jeffersonian America. It was dominated by Jeffersonians, those that believed in the Federal Republic, a pluralistic federal republic. Lincoln and the nationalists gained ascendancy in 1861, only by force, but yet they win. And so the nationalist vision of America really takes forward till 1945. And it's in 1945 that you have the greatest expression of that nationalism. Now, you could say that carries out, but I think there's a shift from 1945 forward. It's a different kind of nationalism. It's an internationalism. But certainly, we're creating the solidification of America. You've got Lincoln. Then you had some pushback to that in the 19th century. And then, of course, you had Teddy Roosevelt and the progressives. And that led into World War II, ultimately, with Franklin Roosevelt. And that's really the only time. I mean, people talk about American unity during a war. If you look at American wars, that's the only war where you saw tremendous American unity. Every other war in American history, you didn't have it as much. There was dissent. There was dissent in World War I. There was dissent in the Spanish-American War. There's certainly dissent in the War for Southern Independence. There was dissent in the Mexican War. There was dissent in the War of 1812. There was dissent in the American War for Independence. But the World War II is the only one where you don't have that. You had opposition to getting into the war, leading into it in 1941. But as soon as the war came and Japan attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor, all that dissent went away. And you had a unification like you had never seen before. It was the fullest expression of Lincolnian America. And because of that, when the war is over, you have international America. You have world power America. And the vision was, we need to take this unity that we have and spread it around the world. And we need to fight the Cold War. We need to fight the commies. We have an international America now. It was a different America. And that's the America in which we live. The Cold War is the gift that keeps on giving. But it's also in that time that you start seeing the eradication of the diversity of the pluralistic American Federal Republic. So, it's a different America. But Lincolnian America, that period of time, about almost 100 years, where you had Lincolnian America, that was created by a myth, an image, a memory of an individual. So who was the real Lincoln? This is a question that Tom DiLorenzo asked in his book. It's a question that Ludwell Johnson asked here in the 1987 is when this piece was written. Which Lincoln do we remember? Do we remember Lincoln the racist? Do we remember Lincoln the warmonger? Or do we remember Lincoln in a different way, a man who tried to save the Union? That's the Lincoln that people, he freed the slaves and saved the Union. This is the Lincoln that people remember without actually even looking at the record. So where is that different if the people like Blight and others who look at the South and say they're not remembering properly, where is that different? How is that different with Lincoln? If the Lincoln that we want to remember is Lincoln freed the slaves and saved the Union, at what cost to save the Union? And did he really free the slaves? And was he someone interested in the equality of the races? We know the record says no on all those things. He saved the Union. What Union? A new Union. A Lincolnian Union. The Nationalists finally gained ascendancy by violence, something they had not been able to do before that point. What about Lincoln on race? I mean, you have Lincoln's views, and as Johnson says here, he had to embrace white supremacy just to get elected. And then, of course, he grew. This is why Lincoln grew over time. He stopped being less, he wasn't as much of a racist. Really? I mean, do we know that? He still was pushing colonization, even in the middle of the war. It's silly to think that Lincoln had changed. This is a piece I wrote years ago. It was white supremacy and exclusively Southern ideology. Race, quote-unquote racism, was an American position in the 19th century. Northerners, in fact, said some very nasty things about race. If you read Larry Tise's book on pro-slavery, and you read what he said about pro-slavery. He said pro-slavery can't be a cause of the war because that was an American position. Not a Southern position, an American position. If you go back and look at the very first pro-slavery pamphlet ever written in America, North America, it was written in 1701 in Massachusetts. And what you find, if you could put that up next to Calhoun's 1837 speech, that's almost the exact same thing. In fact, you could make an argument that Southerners weren't even unique. They weren't even original in their pro-slavery thoughts when you get to the 30s, late 30s, 40s, and 50s. They weren't original at all. Northerners have been saying these things for years. So when you look at that and you start looking at the memory, we've forgotten one very important component of American history, and that is the complexity of this federal republic and the diversity of thought. Not only that, how important this, how unified, I should say, Americans really were on several issues. Secession was an American position. It was an American principle. The American War for Independence is a war of secession. Northerners talked about secession constantly. Into the 1840s, abolitionists were talking about secession. This was an American belief, not some crazy, offhand, fabricated thing that Southerners came up with out of thin air. It was an American belief. All these other issues that are simply just placed on the South and said the South is the other. These people were the oddballs. They thought things that nobody else in the North thought. That is an incorrect memory. If you put it in that context, the South is 100% American, uniquely American. They just held on to things longer than the North did. Maybe the North, as I said before, the North was pursuing a different America, something that was not American and had not ever been American, or maybe it was a different kind of American, but certainly the South was American, and the South was not committing treason. Southerners were not traitors. They were adhering to an America in which they believed in, an America that was real and tangible. It's the embarrassing analogy. It's the memory of Confederate dead. This is the point of remembering with monuments and symbols these Americans. And the last piece of the week that I haven't talked about yet, very quickly, is written by Lee Cheek. It was Donald Davidson Revisited. And again, it's remembering the Nashville Agrarians. Why to remember them? Because of their impact moving forward in the 20th century. It's agrarianism in that part of American society. Why were the agrarians writing? Because they wanted to remember the South. They wanted to maintain that American culture. As Cheek says, Davidson believed the American South was culturally diverse, and to study the culture of the South was to study many cultures within one. This is true. The South is not monolithic. Racially, it's not monolithic. Culturally, it's not monolithic. Even among white Southerners, it's not monolithic. There are several Souths. In terms of religion, it's not monolithic. The Orthodox Southerners, Protestant Southerners, Jewish Southerners. In the 1860s. So all of that was there. And these people were all Southern. White Southerners, Black Southerners, all Southern. And so that's the beautiful part of the South. But the point of I'll Take My Stand was to remember the South and to say, this is who we are. We are going to resist this because this is not us. Consumerism, industrialization, that's not us. Now, you can make an argument that there were Southerners that believed in those things, but certainly they saw that as wearing down Southern society and culture. The process would erase what the South was. And so that's why it's important to remember the South and to, as Winchell said, never forget what we are, what the South is. Until next time, good day.